morning.
Praise the Lord.
Glory to God.
Okay, pledge of allegiance to all of you. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Norman, did you add an agenda item?
No, I don't have any.
Gloria?
No.
I have one, and we'll add it to item number 8. We're going to call it summer vacation.
That's a good one.
If I were mayor. Public comments? Kathy, have anything we'd like to comment on?
Not right now.
Nothing?
No.
We'll give you a second shot at it.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Approval of the meeting minutes from Wednesday, April 17th. Gloria, any changes or additions?
No, I don't have any.
Norman?
No.
Nothing for me? Have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve.
I'll second.
Okay, vote. All say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Number 7, land use format permit processing procedures.
Well, tonight we have two wonderful guests, Nick Lilac from Deschutes County and Karen Sworsky from DLCD. And at our last meeting, I mentioned that they had offered to continue on with the discussion of land use planning and planning commissions and the role of the state, county, and the role of the planning commissioner. So tonight they're here to carry on that discussion. They have some PowerPoint slides. And I'll turn it over to Karen and Nick.
Great, thank you. I'm Nick Lilac. And does it have a presentation there? Does the little projector deal work?
Should.
Perfect. I'll just pull mine up first, and then we'll...
You've got the flashlight.
We might want to...
I just actually just...
While they're
in it. And then I'll pull...
Oh, nice.
Oh, it's a fancy thing.
Yeah.
Looks good on this.
And then here's a couple of copies, I know. As the keeper of the record, I'll make sure you get one first there.
Okay. We're just trying to, they have a very high-tech lighting system here.
Perfect. If you do the high-tech lighting, I'll see how this works. Perfect. Oop, maybe.
Maybe
one
off.
That's good. It's like we have to figure out how you get this light show up. Certainly.
Well, I just had it.
Yes, it did.
Okay, thank you.
Oops. I probably pressed the wrong button.
When in doubt, hit exit.
Where's the exit?
Sarah Nixon. Justin, pick up
Resync.
The packet.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. Source.
Searching. So you may have to stand behind the computer and hit the...
That seemed to blip out everything.
Do we know
what to do with the remote?
I don't honestly.
Is it the function F8 again or something?
It wouldn't be tied to.
No,
I think it was just. I just hit a button and it didn't.
Yeah.
Because it came up.
Did you hit page?
System already
no,
busy
hit,
and
I didn't know if those were the.
Oh.
And I probably should have just hit those or something else. Let me see if I.
You missed dinner last week. We were looking for it. And I think the
I talked to him. I guess then held on all the
time. Everybody got the big fight with William.
Why?
He was drunk and you act like an asshole. We're at me by the
ear. That's
yeah, that's our speed up.
No,
yeah.
What are we doing?
We're just going to restart
right
now. Very close. Made Richard back. Made Eagle Man.
Some of you set him straight?
He called me up and apologized. I hope he did get straight.
Yeah.
Because
no need for that.
They can put up with it.
Yeah.
No.
Usual technical difficulties.
I see the green light popping on there. That's good.
That's cool.
That's a good
light.
Sign. You know, I put on a one-day conference a month or two ago, and we did PowerPoint presentations all day long, and we did not have a single technical problem. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just, I didn't even, you just like didn't realize it until the end of the day, and you think, whoa. So what have you done?
Things go smoothly.
Yeah.
My gal works just across the street, and she said she could come over and help out.
Well, I hear something humming.
It could be
it's trying to do something.
You had it on before.
Yeah. Probably just hit the wrong button. I assume it was the advanced button.
I would have guessed that.
But I could also restart this.
Why don't you restart that?
No, so there's just,
go back to where you were.
Because everything's on there.
Yeah. And then just forget using the remote and just do it from there. Since there aren't so many of us.
Yeah, I can certainly speak to you.
Oh, the computer's dead. Okay.
Yes, that sets you back. Gets you.
All right, there we go.
What's that?
Well, that's where we started. No source.
Yeah, we had to reboot your computer to the lockdown. So you're going to have to really log back on and start over.
Okay, now we have a screen.
No, do I?
Yeah, but it says no source, just like right. I did before.
Right. Cam got that for you.
And it's
a lot of things.
Here, why don't you sit
down? It's a lot of,
well, the challenge is it's not very
nice. That's why I wonder if we're using some elements that's a beautiful thing. It's a
I don't know. I've never seen Lori go over there and do something.
Lori was pretty good at working this.
For some reason,
that's the way it looks.
That's right. We'll
and it's got everything.
So that's the knowledge.
Well, there is a cable over here, so you can set your computer up.
And it shouldn't be any different.
To the point now.
Where yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Shouldn't go. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I don't know anything.
It's all mysterious to me. This is my go. Yeah, my husband's name.
Figure out.
Yeah.
But we had a slide up before.
Is there a
city council?
I can go grab my laptop too.
She was one of the ones that screwed
up. Yeah, maybe we should try this.
Okay.
You know, Karen's on the
maybe we just plug it right in.
Yeah.
It's
great.
Can we use this exit?
Yeah.
The
door lock should stay open once you open it.
Okay.
Probably.
So who is the chair?
Doug
is. Okay, so we do have the chair.
That's pretty confidential.
He'll be locked in.
This year. That's embarrassing. I think that's about as far
that's the horses.
They're about to get through this year.
Bad news. You know, the Friday after I saw you last, we lost Sam to a rupture.
Oh, no.
So, is that the horse that I called earlier? Sam was he the really big one? Or he was our 18 and a half, yeah.
Nobody knew
he was only 8 years old. It was such a sad thing.
No,
hey, that could be some of the hangover.
Oh, no, I think you should do lost. I thought it was a dog.
Nobody knew it.
Bank
call.
No.
Said, what do you want to do with money?
Everything's going.
What's in Luana? I know they talked to her.
I want that credit card.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, she's doing
Luana. It used to be the
City Recorder.
Yeah.
For years ago. Yeah.
That's right. I got tons of batteries.
City credit card.
This will pop right out.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah. 18,000
She used to buy all the stuff and all the supplies and everything, so she had a credit card with $18,000.
These better be damn good slideshows, right?
I tried to borrow it, but they wouldn't let me out.
Yeah.
Man, I was headed for Ronald World Cruise, man. Let me tell you.
We had a credit card for our board, too, you know, at the ranch. But we give them like a $250.
Yeah.
Cuts them off short.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know,
yeah,
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
We're approved.
When we do intercom,
she
we had to
do it. You know, so that's why they set up the
when you
could
set up the phone.
Oh, you mean our conference phone? Yeah, I usually do that.
Okay, and who do we talk to?
If not, let's just start.
What lady is it we talk to?
City of Folsom.
What do you mean, what lady?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whoever we're talking to on the phone, Stu, wherever she is. The shoots or.
It depends on who it is that we're talking to. Who the call is made to.
Stories come out of that. Give the old boys winkish anything to the new city.
Yeah.
You know.
They just wouldn't talk to them.
I grew up.
Yeah.
Right down the street.
And drove in cars.
That was a long time ago. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you.
When we lived there, they became cities.
Quickie.
I moved there when I was in the fourth.
See if I covered the basics? You started with constitutional case law. You lost me right there.
Six.
No, we wrote that in. State law, yeah.
And it's when I was six. And so I was there until I went to college.
We had some good friends that lived there for quite a long time. They left Southern California.
Which it did. I had to wait forever for
that's how it's over now. It's overgrown.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We got houses clear
to they moved to El Dorado Hills. Yeah. And then they just recently
is there
moved
a
west of
feed on the back of
Sacramento?
The device itself?
So, I don't know why they said
that. On the back
California.
Of that, is there a... What are you talking about?
Well, it's sad, you know, because I grew up there. I mean, I was born there.
It might be. I don't know how I could get there.
And what happened to Los Angeles, and I mean, my family goes back generations. So I know, Culver City is where the ranch was. The Bullmill Creek was where their ranch was. I used to ride horseback at LAX.
Wow. You grew up in Santa Monica, did you say?
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Santa Monica. Okay. I grew up in Westchester.
Yeah, okay, grew up in Manhattan. My first couple, 3 years was in Manhattan Beach. I grew up in Covina.
Oh, Manhattan Beach?
Yeah, and then I grew up in Covina. My folks moved.
That's where my first husband grew up in Manhattan Beach.
Covina was, when I was a kid there, was the one of the largest orange producers in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Not anymore, but we lived in one of the first subdivisions.
Yeah, Orange County is no longer Orange County.
Thousand Oaks doesn't have any oaks, and no shortage of irony in Southern California.
My husband, somebody sent him an email the other day, and it had pictures from the turn of the century and stuff in Los Angeles. It was so much fun. Some of those things were still there.
And somebody did a book. There's a guy who goes around. He's done one for Portland too, where he tries to find the spot and takes a picture today.
Oh, as it
and then has them side by side. Some of them are pretty interesting. Yeah.
Well, we used to ride the trolleys, and I never went to the Brown Derby, but I know where it was.
Yeah, I remember where the.
I was at the first Bob's Big Boy, and
Do you remember the donut place with the giant donut? Yeah. And the first McDonald's.
That one I didn't really I didn't know that was there. So
that's not.
So you're still not connecting to the screen?
Well, that's what I did. I was
like, kind of like old home week around here, isn't it?
Yeah.
We all ought to go down to the little Deschutes Slides and spin around.
There you go.
Well, my husband just sold his mother's house in Whittier, so that severed my last connection, and I never have to go to Southern California again.
Well, we've got kids down there, so we go on a regular basis.
Oh, man. No. I'm just fine with me if I never put you. Are you?
Go everywhere.
Unless we get grandkids in California, we're not
that. So this is what's moving her own.
She's getting closer.
Oh, go to Eureka next week.
That's what I have. But then she's moving there in June. She's a nurse.
Oh. I like Eureka.
It's not translated to the screen.
They're having some real struggles. Financially, they're having a lot of problems.
Unless there's something else with the
too many places that are.
I was watching a thing on Detroit that is so sad.
Resync.
Because you can also connection point up there right by the screen.
Oh, there is?
Is that what's worked best in the past?
Well, that's what's worked mostly. I mean, that's what they've mainly done.
It's just he thinks it's catching up with the area, Could be.
There's nobody in the building or next to her.
No, I called the gal and I got her cell phone. I just got her answering machine.
I mean, it could be that one, but.
I don't see.
Is there a cable?
Is there something to connect to?
I thought so, but maybe I'm mistaken.
That won't work.
Well, you know, I can try.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, this should do it.
Okay.
All right.
See what happens.
I know they always say it.
You were absolutely right. See, we should have picked it from the beginning.
Very beginning. Now, function update.
You know, we're just so high.
Just in case.
I know, let's hope.
No, I think we're probably not.
Nobody happens, nothing works.
No, you know, we did this, you know, we're having those meetings on.
Well, I also did.
Public works.
Yeah, sewer water, for engineering.
How hard is that?
And for the sidewalk.
Yeah.
We approved one.
Still not working.
It's just not.
Sewer water just doesn't go.
Just for Virginia.
Next week, there's four companies that are buying that want to do all the sidewalks here in town. And the streetlights. So the streetlights might be.
So the person who actually does all of this is not present generally?
We don't have anybody.
Things are moving forward a little bit, but they're.
Well, like Jim said, once, you know, some of the things start to happen, then at least it will show this progress we made. He was showing me the thing on the signal there. Sidewalks. And I guess there's some things in for this also. There's four different plans.
This is $100,000.
That's a.
About $90,000.
What would you have to do for your?
I don't understand why it's so much.
You got HDMI cable.
Did they get that contract on it?
Well, it's just. We just approved setting it up right here. It's small.
Engineering firm right this morning. You have to get in here. No, that's next week. Whatever they need.
That's why we brought stuff in.
Thank God. I thought we emailed.
Yeah.
Anything to do with the government.
Yeah, I'm so spoiled.
I don't know. I think it was the same way.
And it should be.
You guys have this wonderful setup.
Military, all of it. And it's not really right. It just isn't somewhere I hear.
So I have backups.
Because he's a planner.
All right, we have backups to backups. We're just trying to set up our projector. Sorry about this, you guys.
That's okay.
So it seems to be.
We'll give you this one time only.
Well, you guys have equipment here. It's all.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Ourselves.
Yeah.
Put that right here.
I mean, you've got a beautiful setup here. It should be a
bit. And then
Oh, really?
Yeah. It doesn't get used enough, I think, you know.
You should always make sure Kathy DeBone or somebody from Little League's here whenever we start a meeting.
Don't be too
big. They can go home.
We first got here. Computer,
yeah. Not anymore.
He's still pretty good at this.
Oh yeah, he just has a lot of people pulling, honey.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and he has other things too, like he and Jim are working, you know, they've worked on his cars and trucks and stuff. He's got his own hobbies, you know. He still managed to do that a little bit.
You're still trying to grow feed and stuff, but they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, he told me he had hay for sale.
Yeah.
He asked me if I said they need a half a bale for my three chickens. You can give me one?
Yeah.
And then his son's growing pigs for the, you know, 4-H.
For 4-H, yeah.
I guess they got those all sold or they just still had a half left.
Wait, for the local 4-H?
Mm-hmm. You know,
contact them to buy the
what was that name?
Okay. I don't know.
So usually, so you know John, right? John Jennings? John?
No.
He's the other DLCD person who comes down quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
He does that. He raises pigs for 4-H.
Yeah.
And he usually has a number of takers before he. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he usually has some extra new sales on Craigslist, tether 4-Hers. Yeah.
Maybe that's
why. Just up to Swift Steel, Redmond, they had all these, you know, pictures up there. Thank you for buying this and this and this.
Yeah.
I'd like to buy it.
Well, you know, I usually split a half with one of my friends, and it's a good pig.
Yeah, it's very good meat.
The one thing I would do, though, if you ever buy a fair pig, just a little insider bit, pick it up yourself and get it slaughtered. Yeah, because you know what they do to them? They put them on a truck and they ship them all the way out to and just think of the stress. I mean, these are pigs that have been pets, you know, and they jam them on a truck with a bunch of other pigs and take them down to Modesto and slaughter them.
I'm bringing this up at the next council meeting.
Done gently here. Yes. I don't need all that adrenaline. Yeah, well, that's what John does with his pest and pigs. He takes them around. And we call it staking, not bacon. It's thick and it's...
We went to your bike and went, hey, for Christmas season.
Yeah, they do a nice job.
Yeah, you can really tell the difference.
Yeah. I slow cooked a shoulder this weekend.
Nice stuff.
Waiting for me at home.
Darn it.
Yeah, no, I haven't either. I'm thinking about that.
That's perfect.
All right.
I need yours.
Okay. That's beautiful. What a nice... Yeah. Did you take that picture?
I did.
That's very nice.
Just coming off of Outback.
Very nice.
Or no, I take that back. I'm coming off of the other one, Northwest.
Yeah, very nice.
Look at my phone, no less.
You know, that's... The phones take pretty good pictures.
They do.
I mean, Niles has stopped, my husband, the photographer, and he stopped carrying a little tiny camera with him. He uses his phone.
I think we are all set.
All right.
Okay, put my... What's it? Yeah, here we go. Okay, so we're all set.
Very good.
So we can just trade seats.
How about that for the suspense? We were just trying to build a little...
Yeah.
Okay.
Good, so ready to kick off?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go ahead. No, and we can wait a little bit longer if anybody wants.
All right. No, the ex-mayor was telling me she...
So my name is Nick Lelak, and I've been the planning director with Deschutes County for just about 4.5 years. A couple weeks ago, I was appointed permanently to being the community development director, which means in addition to planning, I also oversee building now, on-site septic systems, code enforcement, and then we have a range of permit technicians that help keep everything coordinated. So it's still kind of an uphill learning curve for me for a couple of the divisions that I don't have as much familiarity with, especially as I'm being launched right into the position right in the middle of budget season. So it's great. It's every day is a new challenge, and it's fun to do it. And this is a great break to come back to what I truly know the most and the best, which is planning. So I'm happy to do this. Interrupt me at any time. I have a few slides. I'm going to turn it over to Karen, then I'll come back and wrap it up. And we hope that this will be informative, informal, ask questions as we go. This is all about making it work for you. Overview of what we're going to go this evening. We're going to talk just a couple slides, federal laws, early republic, legality of planning. The reason I want to cover that, and you may know it inside and out, but you will be at some point as a planning commission confronted with citizens or applicants or somebody that says, that's not constitutional. What are you doing? So I want to give you the framework of what makes it constitutional. We're not going to, you know, careers are spent on this issue. We're going to spend about 5 minutes. But it gives you the 10,000 foot level. Karen's going to spend, this is the majority of the presentation, land use planning in Oregon. I'm going to talk a little bit about the different roles of planning commission, city council, and staff. This is... And you probably have a good sense of it since most of you have been in this position now for some time, but there's some helpful things to remember. Every planning commission I've ever always worked with is different. Some want to be on the ground in the office with the staff and say, well, wait a second, why aren't we doing this? And others want to be, well, why are our decisions being challenged? You know, it's remembering what all the different pieces are. So we'll spend a few minutes on that. Some tips and tricks on how to be a better planning commissioner, not to suggest that you're not all perfectly operating that way now, but they're just some helpful reminders that I've gained from my career and from a variety of sources. Let's jump right into the first question. This is where careers are made. It's these 12 words. In the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it is referred to as the Takings Clause. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And that's generally where everything ends. That's where, and you'll hear from property rights groups, look, this is what the Constitution says, therefore, what you're doing isn't legal. Except, the 10th Amendment to the Constitution gives states the police power. This describes the basic right of governments to make laws and regulations for the benefit of their communities. This becomes, and we'll talk about it in just a very high level, this becomes the basis for planning and zoning across the country, and I'll talk about that again at a pretty high level here in just a minute. Let's go backwards. This is, again, super high level. In the early 1800s, this nation was agrarian, anti-urban. There really was very minimal role for government, if any. Well, flash forward to the 1950s to the 1850s to the 1910s. All of a sudden, we need nuisance laws. There are private lawsuits as a result of urbanism, and we have private lawsuits over all kinds of impacts. And you know, am I showing you egregious examples? Yes, but this really did happen, and these were the causes and the pieces that started regulating nuisance environmental issues in cities. You know, horses would travel right down the road, and there lie their waste, and there were very good reasons for public health laws. The industrialization was on the rise. And this is when we had the first cities and states beginning to regulate land use and planning at a very high level. The evolution of zoning. What's interesting then is in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the need for zoning was requested by progressive reformers due to all this congestion you had in the cities, but also the business community due to the impacts of new development. All of a sudden, the new development wasn't necessarily compatible with what was next to it, and so you had this weird alliance, which we often have, which creates, in some cases, hopefully, the best laws that we have. With strong support from U.S. Chamber of Commerce and U.S. Commerce Secretary Herbert Hoover, they appointed an advisory committee to develop the Standard State Zoning Enabling Act in 1922 and the State City Planning Act in 1927. And by 1950, almost all states had adopted zoning and planning enabling legislation. But still the question is, is this constitutional? Here's the question. The question is finally answered for those of us that have been to planning school and law school, etc. In 1926, the landmark case in the U.S. Supreme Court decision, the Village of Euclid versus Ambler Realty, it upholds the legality of zoning powers, and very broadly, the purpose was to protect public health, safety, morals, and general welfare. In that case alone, the United States Supreme Court said zoning, planning is legal. Now from there, it's broadly interpreted, and this is just the first case. I mean, this has been litigated, not this case, but cases have built upon this for nearly the last century. I mean, we're 13 years shy of that. Addressing everything you can imagine. Well, it's design review. Okay, so we can zone. We can say where you can put houses or where you can put shops or where you can put parks. But is it really in the government's interest to say what those houses or businesses look like? That's design review. That's site plan review. Well, through future case law, the United States Supreme Court said yes, under the 10th Amendment, that is all held to be legal under the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So the legality of planning in Oregon. 1919 legislation authorized Oregon cities to zone, and of course you'll see the date is prior to the big 1926, the landmark case. The Oregon Supreme Court in 1925, just a year before, held that local regulation of use of property does not violate due process or equal protection clauses of the U.S. Constitution. In this case, they were looking at, and they were tying it back to the 14th Amendment. In 1947, the legislature authorized counties to zone. And today, the state of Oregon not only says it's legally allowed, but the state of Oregon requires cities and counties to plan and zone, and they have to adopt them by ordinances, which are local laws, and we're required to update our plans and codes. And this is sometimes it'll be a minor plan amendment in other counties, Douglas County being one example, where a group of citizens that represented property rights said what you're doing is illegal, and so they had to go back through and talk about the history and legality of planning and zoning. Look, all we're doing is complying with Oregon law that says we have to update our plans and codes to reflect changes in state law. And state law says you have to do it every year. It shouldn't be more than a year old. Now, have most counties and cities done that?
No.
Deschutes County, we're good at it because we have adequate funding. We have a staff that monitors it, and we are under the state's microscope, or we're putting ourselves under the state's microscope because we're pushing the envelope on a lot of things a lot of times. But that's not the case with everybody.
So, I can tell you Sherman County's not.
Yeah, so a lot of counties don't have the resources to do it. They just say, well, this is our code. It's completely out of date, so you need to go back and look at state law. And by the way, here's where it is. It's in this statute or in this state rule, and Karen will talk about that in more detail. But that's just a 10,000 foot level. How is it that what we're doing is legal and it's been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court to be constitutional? It's not to say that you can take away all somebody's the value of the property. That's not what this is saying. This is just saying it's legal to say you can organize your land uses. You can put houses in one place, and that one place may be below a business or above a business, etc. So I'm happy to answer any questions at the real high level. Otherwise, I'll be happy to turn it over to Karen.
Well, you have one. Is it being challenged quite a bit?
No, if you want to answer it, I can. What has been challenged recently has been eminent domain and the use of eminent domain it's still a planning issue, but it's when governments go and say, we're going to take your property, so it is just compensation, but we're going to turn right around and we're going to flip it and sell it to somebody that's going to put that property to a higher and better use.
Yeah.
And that was a big decision in 2005 or 6, Kelo versus the state of Connecticut. And that was what went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, that's legal. Now, Oregon and many other states in response to that said, we're going to make that illegal here.
Yeah.
Illegal.
So in Oregon and in other states, now if the public schools, parks districts, cities, counties, the state, whomever wants to do it, ODOT, they can only condemn private property, and they have to pay just compensation. They have to pay the actual amount that it's worth, but it can only be used for public purposes.
Yeah.
A new road, a new school, a new park, whatever the public purpose is.
A lot of us were kind of shocked by that Supreme Court decision.
Is that like in Kaiser, when I lived in Kaiser, they went in and tried to take over a lot of property. I used to work with the person. That is now the Kaiser Mall, but I think they took them to court and made the city pay them the proper compensation. They were trying to get him out for like $200,000. Well, he had acres and acres. It was just crazy, but they did win. It took a long time.
Yeah.
So that is that what you're talking about. They have to.
They have to compensate. Yeah.
One of the workshops or something that I went to, it's a big part of the discussion, that a lot of these rules and ordinances and things were made in Salem for the Central Valley area. And we ran into on our comp plan that it was really hard to, like, we have snow here. You have to think in those terms.
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do with the snow? Our roads and our curbs and our things got to be different than in Salem.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a mindset that's really hard to get around sometimes.
And you know, the truth is that that's more of a perception than a reality. A lot of people perceive that there are these rules that come from Salem that are one size fits all. There's actually tremendous flexibility in the rules, and we were able to find those for the city of Lafayette.
Yeah.
It just takes the right mindset that you're not taking things to the most narrow interpretations. Yeah. Another before
you go any further, I neglected to do one thing before your presentation.
Uh-huh.
The lady in the back, that's Kathy Egan. She's one of our city councilors. I'm sorry I didn't introduce her before, but that's she. We'll probably have a lot of questions and a lot of input.
Yeah. So the one thing I wanted to say on Nick's topic before I jump into my presentation is another set of court cases that you hear a lot about, especially in smaller communities, are, we call them Nolan Dolan. there were two sets of decisions about what is required before you can exact something from a landowner. And one of the I always get them confused. Dolan was the trail, right?
Mm-hmm. Dolan was the Tiger Trail. Yeah.
So the Tiger Trail, that's a classic one where the city had a comprehensive plan that had a trail alignment shown along a creek. And when the developer went in to improve his building, the city said, oh, well, you've got a trail on the plan. That means you have to dedicate a right-of-way. And that got challenged. So what the decision said there was cities and counties can make those exactions, but they got to have really good, what they call a nexus. There has to be a reason that you're asking for those exactions. So that's one of the lines you guys will probably find yourself walking. It's challenging. Yeah. So I'm Karen Sworsky. I'm the regional rep for Department of Land Conservation and Development. I say DLCD because it's too hard to say the other thing. And my territory is the middle part of the state. I call myself the Highway 97 corridor person. So I have Wasco, Sherman, and Hood River counties, and then the three counties central, and then I have Lake and Klamath. So because of that, I deal with a really wide range of interesting issues. But you guys are, Lapine is the first city, the newest city on the state, and I'm lucky enough to be the regional rep to have helped a new city get acknowledged. So I feel I have a kind of special place in my heart for Lapine. Now this presentation that I'm going to go through is one that was developed in Salem for the state, right? And a lot of this stuff I'm going to go through pretty quick because it's probably more information that you want. But I can provide this slide presentation to you guys, and so you can go through it if you want. This was specifically developed for new planning commissioners. You guys aren't strictly new planning commission members, but you have a fairly new planning commission. So. These are the subjects that I'm going to go over fairly quickly. And so the first question is, why are you planning? What does the Planning Commission do? And you guys are such a new city, you're so fresh, you probably have a really good sense of why you need a plan, right? You need a plan because you're trying to figure out who you are and establish your vision. So that's the big picture. But it also is, then you have your plan to help you guide yourself. And you notice the word efficient gets used a lot in here. That's a really big issue for us on the state level. We try to help cities keep their urban growth boundaries compact and plan for their roads and sewer and water so that they don't get ahead of themselves on what they can actually afford. So because we have these years of experience with that, that's a lot of what we do. Is talk about efficiency. Now, I really like this slide because if you'll notice, it goes in a circle, right? So you have, these are all the sets, steps you go through when you're planning, but this is what I always say to people who get into planning is, don't ever expect to be done. You're never done. As soon as you feel like you're done, that's when you have to start over. So I have this little thing that I call the egg-shaped theory of planning, right? So you hope that you're not going in a circle. What you hope you're doing is every time you go around, you come out a little bit, and then you go back and you do it again. But it's egg-shaped, not circular. So keep that in mind. But you will feel like, gosh, didn't we just do this? And the answer is probably, yeah, you probably did. You just have to do it again.
That's a good slide. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. I when I saw that, I said, yes, that's what I've been saying for years. Yeah. Now, one of the things that I struggled with when I first started to work, my background until I came to work for the state was in the private sector, so I had to learn a lot of this stuff when I came to the state, is the difference between the Oregon revised statutes and the rules. And you'll hear people talk about statutes and rules all the time. So this is just a little refresher on that. The statutes are the laws, and those are the things that are formulated and adopted by legislatures. Sometimes it's not pretty, but those are what we start with, and they set the state policy. And then what we do is make rules to interpret the laws. So you'll hear you'll hear somebody say, "Well, that's in the rule," or "My commission does rule making." That means that they're figuring out what kind of laws we need that will help us implement the statutes.
Karen, before you go on,
yeah.
I hate to do this, but I have to jump in real
quick. Yeah, sure, no.
Before working for Deschutes County, I had worked for the city of Redmond for a number of years, And one of the things that's really important to understand, and one of the really great things about Lapine Incorporating, is that when you're under county jurisdiction, a lot of what is determined about how we plan or zone, there's a lot of flexibility, but not for counties. There's not nearly as much for counties.
No, so it's for cities.
A lot of what counties have to do are in the top part. It's the revised statutes. What we can do on farmland or forest land is determined in statute. One of the beauties about cities is you have so much more flexibility. The biggest challenge you have, that Karen mentioned, is that urban growth boundary, which you only go through every 5 or 20 years, and then it's complying with ODOT's regulations on occasion.
Yeah.
For good reason, but the Oregon Department of Transportation. But I can't emphasize enough, having worked for a city and a county, how much more flexibility you have with your own plans and codes under a city jurisdiction.
That's one of the reasons that cities incorporate, that communities incorporate. So you probably heard about the statewide planning goals, right? And there's 19 of them. Only 14 really apply. But they're all in statute, and those are kind of the bones of the Oregon land use. You guys are both native Oregonians, right? None of you are. Okay. So I worked in about 5 different states a little bit, and when they say things look different here, you know, our Oregon slick, it's true. No one else has quite the organization of statewide planning that we do, and the goals are one of the things that makes us different. And so everything always goes back to the goal. What are we trying to do? And the very first goal is citizen involvement, and that's your biggest role, is citizen involvement. You are in the rule. You are the citizen involvement committee for Lapine. So, and then you'll see the other ones that they all make sense. And then when you get down to goal 14, anything after that are really area specific, and they don't apply to us, which is nice. So this is just a little diagram that explains how the hierarchy works. I'm going to talk about the Oregon Revised Statutes and the statewide planning goals. They're essentially the same. Underneath those are the rules that interpret them. And then beneath that is your comprehensive plan, which needed to be in compliance with the statewide planning rules, the goals, which is what we were working on, Deborah and I were working on for a year and a half or so.
And it never ends, that's true.
And then underneath that are your ordinances, which are your local rules that implement your plan, and those all guide your local decisions. So this is, we're just going to talk a little bit about the rules of local planning, and Nick has gone over some of these. So the first thing you do is prepare and adopt your comprehensive plan, which you've got. Now you've got it, you will immediately start amending it. That's just going to happen. You probably already have it. They don't even, and so all your amendments have to go through a similar process. And you have your zoning code, which you probably are already starting to adjust. And zoning codes are fluid. They do change all the time. Your circumstances change, you know, your population changes, your ideas about what you want changes, so you're going to be working on those all the time too. And then finally issuing the land use permits.
And Karen, the thing we have coming up is the completion of the TSP.
Yeah, okay. So
that'll be kind of a new change.
And we'll talk about comprehensive plan here in a second. So the comprehensive plan is just what that's your umbrella. That's everything goes into the comprehensive plan. Your transportation systems plan is an element of your comprehensive plan. So it's your and whenever you have questions about when you're looking at a zoning ordinance and you're not quite sure what it means, you go back to the plan. And the policies in the plan should be give you fundamental guidance for what your ordinance was meant to do. And I can say you've got a pretty good comp plan, because Deborah worked like a dog to put it together. And it includes things like your inventory. So you have your inventory of your historic resources are in there, your wildlife resources, you have an economic opportunities analysis. It's all in there. A lot of times those are appendices to the main document, but all that stuff will be in your comprehensive plan. Including maps. So where are you with the TSP right now?
Almost done.
Almost done.
Yeah, we're coming out with the first consolidated draft in probably a few weeks.
Great. So that may require you to make some changes to the comprehensive plan. Some of the policies may change. You may do a wholesale replacement of your Chapter 12, which I think is what we had anticipated.
Right.
So Chapter 12 in your, or whatever chapter that is, the transportation chapter in your comprehensive plan, you'll take that out and you'll put the TSP in.
And possibly some mapping changes.
And mapping changes, yeah. So the urban growth boundary is a line. That's all it is. It's a line on the map. And its purpose is to separate urban from rural. In most cities, the urban growth boundary is bigger than the city boundary. In La Pine, it's not. La Pine has the same. So La Pine has quite a large city boundary because it's coterminous with your urban growth boundary. And the land inside that is meant to be developed as urban uses. It's jointly adopted. One of the reasons why most cities will have a city boundary and then an urban growth boundary is the urban growth boundary is meant to include your 20-year land supply. You got plenty. You guys are not going to be expanding your urban growth boundary anytime soon because you've got plenty of land. You've got more than a 20-year supply. So you have a little bit of a unique situation. I have cities in my jurisdiction like the Dalles, which is pushing. It's got to the point where it is a very hard time. It doesn't have a 20-year land supply for residential land. It needs to expand its urban growth boundary. City of Bend is another. I don't know why I didn't think of them first. So I try not to. So you got your comprehensive plan. It's adopted. We've acknowledged it. Everything's good. Somebody comes along and wants to make a change to it. There's two different ways to change your comprehensive plan. One is what we call periodic review. And I'm not going to talk about this very much because you guys are a long ways off from that. It's not even certain that periodic review will exist by the time you get to it. So we'll just go forward with that one. What's much more likely is that you'll have someone come in with a request for a plan amendment. And this will be something, let's see, what would be a plan amendment? Somebody decides that an area that you've got shown on your comprehensive plan as industrial should really be commercial, and you want to change that. That would be done as a post-acknowledgement plan amendment, or APA, we call it for short. So that means your plan, as we acknowledge it, as the state acknowledges it, is going to get changed. So, and you don't have to revise your entire plan.
I have a question on that. What all does something like that involve? I mean,
it's a good question.
It's a really good question.
Work that up and send it to the state, or what?
It's a local process.
It is local.
We do not have to approve your PAPAs. So what we do, it comes to us. You're supposed to send us notice, and we'll take a look at it and say, that looks fine. It complies with their comprehensive plan. Or if we feel like you're doing something that maybe is edging outside of your comprehensive plan, we might send you a letter saying that we think that you might want to adjust it in such and such a way. We usually work back and forth that way. But if we really don't like what you do, we are just like any other citizen and we have to appeal it. So it's very local. But you have a hearing, you notice it, you go through your local process.
Okay.
Is that kind of what you were asking?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
Well, it's important. At the county level, we try to engage DLCD staff, Karen or her counterpart John here, or the appropriate staff at Salem as we're going through it. So we know what the agency's perspectives are as we're going through the process, because we don't want to be surprised.
Yeah. Right. And we don't really like being surprised either, except in a good way. So if you're contemplating doing something that you think is out there a little bit, it's always a good idea to give us a call. Well, we want to help.
As long as we have a good justification and all that kind of stuff, it's possible to do.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you have to have the justification, the findings, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But the appeal goes to LUBA. You heard that term a lot. That means Land Use Board of Appeals. That's a special court that is set up specifically to hear land use issues.
We're there a lot.
Yeah. We LUBA's kind of a love-hate thing. So the zoning and development code is the set of local rules or laws, really they are, that you set up to implement your comprehensive plan. And that's where all the details are. That's where it says, how tall a building can be, what your setbacks are, all that kind of stuff. The kind of uses that you would allow in the zone, all that sort of thing. So, and we hope that the ordinances have as we call it, clear and objective standards as possible to make that, makes it easier for you guys. And as you know, I'm sure you know this, this will be familiar, that usually land uses fall into one of three categories. They're outright permitted. You know, you look at your code, oh, it's listed there, that's clearly good, we don't got nothing to do. Or it's conditional, which means it's allowed, but you can put conditions on it, meaning that, you know, we might have concerns that it needs screening, or it needs a bigger setback, or there's some other condition that you want to put on it. Having to do a traffic impact analysis might be one condition. And then there's variances, where you're just asking for a one-time exception to some standard that you have in the code. Setback variances are really common. And I believe that you guys hear all those, that they would come all to you.
So, can I?
We'll go, yeah, you want to go back?
Well, okay. They still may need a building permit.
Oh, so yeah.
It's okay with,
yeah.
Maybe you're going.
I'll get you there, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I just.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just saying that. So there are land use permits and or land use actions, and then there's permitting, which are building permits are not land use actions. And you know, so this is one that this took me a long time to understand. And so have you guys heard the terms legislative and quasi-judicial? Do you understand? So, and you guys probably
heard.
Yeah. So the difference is when you make a legislative decision. This would be something where you might be changing a part of the comprehensive plan that affects all parts of the city. So an example might be, say your height restriction in residential is 30 feet and you decide to change it to 35 feet. You know, so that affects everybody who's got property that's in that residential zone. That's a legislative decision. That's changing your rules in a way that affects the whole city. Can you think of a better example than that?
Oh, that was perfect. Yeah. It could be, or, yeah.
And then quasi-judicial means, so I own a piece of property and I want to build a house on it. I'm not asking you to change the height restriction for the whole city, but I want to build my house 5 feet taller. So I'm going to ask for a variance. That would be a quasi-judicial. That means you are acting as judge, and I'm asking you to do something that's special to my piece of property.
So yeah, it's a great way to the legislative is think of yourselves as the state legislature,
yeah,
or Congress, or whatever the case may be. You're creating policies that affect everything. Compared to quasi-judicial, you're a judge.
Yeah,
it's another branch of government. It's truly a complete mind shift.
Yeah,
on look. And here's, and maybe you're going to cover this. You probably will, so I won't say it.
That's okay. That's all right. Go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say is, when it comes to legislative matters, you can come with whatever bias you want. I just think, you know, we need commercial everywhere. Great.
Yeah.
So we're just going to change commercial. You know.
Yeah.
We're going to you know change the policies in our code to say we want commercial. You know, across the city generally.
Yeah.
But if somebody comes in and they want to change the zone on their property and your plan or your zone says these standards have to be met to go from this zone to commercial, you have to put on a different hat. You can't be biased. You have to look at what is in the code and what is being proposed and does it comply with those standards or not.
Yeah, so the quasi-judicial process is a lot more exacting. You have to really look at your code. And what you find a lot of times in cities when they go back and forth is they ask to make a bunch of quasi-judicial decisions and they find that their code isn't giving them clear enough guidance, so they go back and fix their code. But, you know, so you'll see trends like that as you go forward.
I think it's really helpful that we have a city council here because elected bodies always have to do both.
Yeah.
With the county, our planning commission does just as legislative.
Yeah.
They just look to the future.
Right.
We use hearings officers who are land use attorneys that make our quasi-judicial decisions.
I don't believe that you guys do. You don't use a hearings officer. So you guys do make
a
conditional use permit, variance. Yeah.
Would this, like I remember the biomass plant and the height.
Right.
That was a big thing. And
yes.
We ended up having to go into Banff for a hearing. I mean, it was a public hearing or something. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, that was a quasi-judicial.
Well, good question, because two things happened. Yeah. Their first was a hearing to change the height limit for all smokestacks, for lack of a better term, in the Lapine Industrial Zone. So it was legislative.
That was a legislative.
So that was a change to county code. Then they came through and they wanted to have their application to approve their site plan for their plant. That was a tricky deal because generally we would have sent that to a hearing, but the council at the time said, well, staff, you make the decision. So we and the county staff applied our code to that plant and we approved it. And then the council called it up. So it skipped the hearings, which would have been a planning commissioner or a hearings officer. So the city council then heard that matter in Lapine in a big, a big public hearing over that same issue.
Why did they approach it as a broad, concerning all properties? Why didn't they just go one the city property?
Why didn't they just get a variance for their property?
Because the county, good question, great question, because the county code didn't allow variances to go to that level.
That's right. That's
because our code it applies generally to rural areas, and of course, the city of Lapine, you'd already incorporated, but you hadn't had your codes done yet, right. so we couldn't rely on your codes. You still had to rely on our codes.
Yeah. But now we could.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it would be a very different process if you did it.
It's a great example.
Yeah, and that's an example of realizing that there was something wrong, something that didn't work with the code, and making a legislative change to fix that. So this is just what we've been talking about. So there's different kinds of permitting processes. And do you guys have major and minor? I can't remember if Lapine has major and minor. Okay. So you have ministerial. Those are the land use actions that you typically have administrative staff do. So that might be a building. A building permit would be an example of that. I can't think of what other ministerial. What do you guys do administratively at the county? Sorry, a lot.
Yeah, ministerial is almost just over the counter. Yeah. It's not even a decision.
So it's something that, there's no judgment. They either meet it or don't. There's no judgment applied. And then when you get into the major and minor, those are the ones where you apply some judgment. And then legislative, we understand that. So here's just some examples of ministerial decisions. They use building permit as a ministerial decision. That's a little confusing because it's not a land use permit.
It didn't used to be until Deschutes County made it one.
Oh.
A couple of years ago, the county signed off on
that.
A couple of years ago, the county signed off on a building permit for a property owner on Sizemore Road. Very contentious, and it was appealed. The fact that we just signed off on the building permit, it was appealed. And it went to LUBA, and LUBA issued a decision and said, yes, you exercised judgment,
and it
made signing off on the building permit a land use decision. So I really appreciate you raising this question, and this is a great example, because when Lapine takes over your planning here whenever you do it, over the next couple months or the next year, whenever you do it, Deschutes County, we will still issue building permits. So we will then coordinate with the city to say, we have a building permit for this use. Is it compatible with your zone? So whether it's Deborah or whomever at the city is designated to sign off on it. We do it right now for Sisters, we do it for Redmond, other jurisdictions that we building permits, and the city does planning and zoning, because you have so much more flexibility, as I said, with your planning and zoning than we do in the county. So it's really important for cities to perform that role. So that's a great example, Karen.
So this is just a little bit more on that, major and minor, since you guys don't do that. Now, I have this table. Typically, people would like to have a copy of this, so I made some hard copies of this one, so you don't have to memorize it. But this kind of just lays it all out, what we were just talking about, and kind of gives you the requirements. So when a hearing's required, and what kind of findings you need, and where it goes if somebody wants to appeal it, that sort of summary. So that'll help you, kind of a cheat sheet. When I saw this, I thought, I wish I had this 2 years ago. So as part of your code, you have development standards, and those are all, you guys are all familiar with this. You do a new building, you got to put in a sidewalk, or you got a street dedication, or you have to put in landscaping. Those are all in your code. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit more. Some of this is repetitive. So as Nick was saying, you're both advisory and decision making. You do comprehensive planning, land use regulation, and community development. And you guys, that's really important. It's really critical work. And part of what you have to do is hold hearings. and recommend changes. So if you're, again, if you're seeing a pattern in your land use applications that come to you that, what if every single person needs a setback variance? Does that tell you something? That tells you your setbacks might be, you may need to go back and change your code. So it's, that's part of your job, is to pay attention to things like that. And to decide, now I, when it says decide official appeals from a planning official decision, I don't think we have that step here in La Pine. You don't have a planning official that would make a decision. You guys would be making all the decisions. So you can,
what's administrative?
Well, we would have some administrative decisions,
yeah,
and
okay,
our procedures ordinance provides a path,
okay,
for whatever happens.
Okay. And, you know, these sound really obvious, but sometimes this can be a difficult, especially the impartial, fair, and objective, and avoiding a conflict of interest, because you guys all live here, and you care about this community, and you have things that you, personal things that you care about more than others, and so that can be kind of a challenging. I've seen planning commissioners really struggle with that. I know if I were a planning commissioner, I would have to put my hand over my mouth a lot.
We need to be a little too close to it.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the things that can be helpful to you are, you know, to get these familiarities, this kind, you know, this kind of presentation, and some of this, and to know your rules on how to conduct a public meeting. Having Deborah here with the rules is really useful. She'll remind you if you're doing it wrong, and Rick too. They both have lots of experience with that. Don't be afraid to ask staff for information. A lot of times I get really frustrated in planning commission meetings because I see that the planning commission is not used to asking staff for information, and for whatever reason the staff doesn't feel comfortable offering it. And it can be really frustrating because a lot of times you can really go far astray and waste a lot of your time when one piece of information might set you right. So don't be afraid to ask questions. And then if you get new commissioners, remember that. This is a real challenge for you guys right now, this being organized and pulling files because you've had staff turnover. But I'm assuming that Deborah set up some good procedures for keeping records.
Yes.
So, yeah. So it's really, you know, it won't be important to you until you get an appeal. And then you're going to be really, really glad that you've got good paperwork and a good paper trail.
So a stupid question, we go to Deborah of something. I'm just trying to learn all this.
Yeah.
So I'd come to you if there was a concern or question.
Yeah, three different ways. Email, phone, or if I'm here.
Okay.
I think you said carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon works.
Yeah, that works.
But part of the service is that you have a staff person available, whether I'm here or not.
Okay.
You can just pick up the phone and call.
Okay.
And that's what the city intends to have happen, because you're in this kind of
iffy.
Yeah. You're in the middle zone.
Well, you're learning. You've got a really steep learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah. So there's three different kinds of meetings that you guys typically have. You know, public hearings, and those are formal. You know, that have been noticed, and you have a certain procedure that you have to follow. And then, and you have special meetings, which this might be considered a special meeting or a work session. And because of the public meeting laws that we have, you have to notice your meetings. So,
well, special meetings have to be noticed too, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's because you want to give people an opportunity to be present. Now, one of the things that I think is really interesting and to remember is the public meetings law guarantees the public the right to view government meetings, but not necessarily to speak. And so you have that authority if you like to exercise it. In a small community like that, that's a you have to be careful with that, you know, because people will remember if they had something to say and you don't let them say it. But there are times when it is useful to be able to say, we are going to deliberate tonight, we are not having a public hearing. You're welcome to listen.
That's a tough one for me to digest.
Yeah. It's very hard.
So a couple ways to think about it. With public hearings, as Karen said, that's that's the formal designated meeting where they can participate.
Yeah.
At a work session, it's at the discretion of the chair. And it sounds like, well, of course we let the public talk. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's a no-brainer. The only pitfall that can happen is that some people will look at the agenda and say, well, I didn't go because it wasn't a public hearing, so I couldn't speak.
Yeah.
And gosh, the chair let people speak, so that's unfair. It should have been noticed as a hearing if they were going to let me speak. So it cuts both ways. And whenever our planning commission chair asks me, I always say, you know, it's at the discretion of the chair. Because we have a rotating chair and they can never exactly remember, gosh, well, can we or not? And our legal counsel really tries to keep the Board of Commissioners from doing so, and the Board of Commissioners really tries not to.
Yeah.
But there are definitely the circumstances where you're right. People have traveled a long way. This is their only opportunity, and so it's, you're navigating that balance.
Okay. What would be a reason for a special meeting, typically?
Usually timing. Something doesn't fall within the normal meeting date.
Yeah, something comes up. You have an opportunity to meet with someone who's traveling through town. Say a legislator was traveling.
A great example is cities have 100, and we do this on behalf of the city today, we have 120 days in order to issue decisions on behalf of the city.
Right.
And generally, we try to get the decisions completed within 60 days because that 120 days includes appeals to the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Yeah.
So we try to do it within 60 days. So a good reason would be, well, you're not quite comfortable with the application yet and you want to continue it, but gosh, two more weeks out or another month out, we're going to be running up against some timelines. So a special meeting is you continue the meeting or you have deliberations or something on a special Tuesday when you normally meet a Wednesday that's not quite as far out or something like that. So
yeah,
that
if there's some, if there's a timeliness issue, you know, and it makes more sense to meet every week for a little while, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
But you still may need to
big
notice.
Project, yeah.
And we do miss it, yeah. Yeah, so when you're having these legislative public meetings, like for your comprehensive plan, the purpose is to get a lot of testimony. So you want to advertise that as much as possible and you want to give people enough time to get all their information in. A lot of planning commissions are very, I don't want to say leisurely, but they're conservative, so they'll definitely, most legislative things will be continued. They won't just have one public hearing, they'll have two, especially if it's an issue that they think the word needs to get out at, you know, that sort of thing. I encourage that. I think it's better to do that than to make people feel like they were being rushed or cut off. And then for the quasi-judicial, though, it's a different thing because that's a hearing for a specific land use. And and usually the people who have the land use in front of you are pretty concerned about getting a decision as quickly as possible. So I think it pays to be as brisk as you can with those kinds of decisions. Well, at least still allowing, you know, an adequate opportunity. So, and then here's the scary part. You know, when you're making those, if you don't conduct your hearings properly, if you don't say the right things and close the hearing and open the hearing, which is all the stuff that Deborah can have with you, if someone is opposed to the project, they can challenge you on your proceeding, not even the substance. So you want to make sure you do it right. It's important.
You probably remember during the BioGreen hearings, we always had to read the
to read that long thing that just puts everybody to sleep, yeah. So that, yeah.
But if you make a procedural error, somebody could zoom in and then really waste your time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are some examples of the kind of public hearings that you might have, quasi-judicial. And one thing about these quasi-judicial public hearings, and that it's always good to keep in mind, is that when you're taking testimony from people and when you're considering it, it needs to be linked to your ordinance. So the information that you're hearing from people, you get a lot of people say, I just don't like this project. Well, what you really need from them is testimony that's linked to some aspect of your code that they feel is not that it's not compliant with, and that can be a challenge. You don't want to. Sometimes you just let people talk, you know. But as you're deliberating, you have to remember that some of that stuff is just emotional and it's not necessarily relevant.
Is that something to bring up
in the beginning.
Yes. It's probably in your little written speech that Deborah's put for you. Yeah, and it doesn't hurt if you have a lot of people testifying. It doesn't hurt to remind them.
And to explain what that means.
Yeah, explain what that means, yeah.
Because it's hard to understand.
But
when you tell somebody you need to relate your comments to the actual criterion, they may not even know what that means.
Yeah, right, exactly. They may just say, I don't like the project, in which case, you know, you just listened to their testimony, but you technically don't use that in terms of your deliberation.
The one thing that you can do is you can help them by asking them, because you're right, this happens today across the county, every city.
Yeah.
I don't like that. It's in the wrong place.
Yeah.
The question you can ask is why.
Yeah. Right.
Because often, one of the cases, one of the criteria or criterion that you will have is compatibility.
Yes.
Is this use compatible with this one? Well, you don't like it. Well, why? Well, I don't like it because it's so darn big.
Yeah.
Or I don't like it because it's just, well, oh, okay, great. So it does start to raise the question of compatibility. And then you can,
That's a really good point.
Probe
the
citizens to try to pull information out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to be really careful to be unbiased in how you treat people. You know, in a community this size, there's going to be people who show up that you don't particularly like, you know, or you already know what they're going to say. And that's another reason why I couldn't be a planning commissioner, roll my eyes at people.
Or it's the big out-of-town developer that comes in and they're looking at your code, at a piece of property, and I'm proposing something nobody likes that's compatible with your code, and everybody around it says, I hate it.
Yeah.
You need to oppose, well, the code said, and so that's, it's challenging. It's that's why you're paid the big bucks.
And so who usually writes the findings? Deborah, do you usually write them?
I would do a draft.
Oh, you do. The county's writing them? Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
for legislative. For legislative, we do it for a quasi-judicial.
At this point, the county does. Sorry.
Okay.
So when we take over
the findings, you guys don't have to worry about
the
staff prepare a draft at a particular time. But you need to be clear when you're making your decision that you have these reasons and that staff is given something to take and write in terms of their findings and your decision, because they can be used to defend your decision. So you, I'm sure you read the little thing about conflict of interest and ex parte contact. Okay, so this could be kind of a really, especially in small communities like Lapine. A lot of times people ask me, do I have a conflict of interest? How do I avoid ex parte contact when I see this person in the grocery store every 3 days, you know? So here's just a little bit of guidance. And conflict of interest is not necessarily bad. It just means that you feel like it might be perceived by the public that your judgment is clouded because of your previous experience or your business or whatever it is. And you guys disclose it, and then you discuss it among yourselves and decide whether it's really a conflict or not. But it's always better to err on the side of...
So it's a commission decision.
It is, yes.
But you should bring it up if you have anything conflict.
You should. If you think it's possible that you might have a conflict. Last time I was at a Deschutes County Planning Commission meeting, somebody brought that up, and everybody decided that they didn't really have a conflict. It's like, we appreciate you bringing it up. We don't feel like it's going to cloud your judgment. So it's all on the record.
So if you had, like, your brother or sister or something, can you recuse yourself and just everybody else?
You can say, I believe I have a conflict of interest and I wouldn't be able to make an unbiased decision, and you're just not part of it. You can sit up there, but you just don't vote.
Yeah. A question just to be prepared for, because it will happen in a small town, and this is something for your ordinances, it's a legal question, is can you be present to establish a quorum but then recuse yourself and just have two members?
Well, that's a great question.
Because in a small town, you know, gosh, somebody's on vacation, somebody's sick, and we've got three members, and one of them has to recuse themselves. So it just depends on what your codes and ordinances allow.
So that's both are legal?
It can be.
Really? Okay.
It can be. I think it's in your code, but it's a legal question.
Okay.
And just because I only see three of you tonight, and
that's
I don't know if your commission's
thinking.
Yeah.
Five. So just be... Plan ahead to think about that.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, that's really good. Okay. And then the ex parte contact, that also sounds really bad, but it's not. And it's going to be a difficult thing for you in a small town because you're going to know people and you're going to run into them. Ex parte contact is not saying hi to somebody in the grocery store. It's that person collaring you next to the lettuce saying, I want to talk to you about my project. And you just have to say to them, I can't. Don't talk to me. And then at the hearing, you should say, I have, I see this person regularly, but we have not discussed the project. That's, and I think most hearings officers even will reveal whether or not they've even done a site visit. And they, that's a type of ex parte contact, to be familiar with the site.
And that's better to declare if it's happened rather than let somebody else bring forward.
Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, so there's a distinction between, so just draw the line and tell that person if they've got something to say, come to the hearing, say your thing on record, and if they don't, then that's what they've done. So, and these are I'm just going to go over these really quickly because you know all stuff. Okay. So the chair is here tonight. That's good. You understand that you do you guys elect your chair? Is it an annual thing? Is that how it goes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So you rotate on an annual basis. Okay. And so your responsibility is to set the agenda and act as the general liaison and read all that stuff that says that about ex parte. And do you guys have subcommittees at this point?
Subcommittees.
No
chair.
No.
Okay.
Last thing we need is another committee.
Yeah, really. Yeah. All right, and then the last few little sets of slides I'll go on for just a little bit. Because Oregon's unique and we have this LCDC and the LCD, I'll just go over this just a little tiny bit. This is you're probably familiar with it. We're having 40th anniversary this year of the land use program. We have a commission, LCDC. That's our boss. It gets confusing. I'm DLCD, they're LCDC.
Yeah.
There'll be a quiz. They're seven members appointed by the governor. Our representative from this region is Catherine Morrow, who some of you may know, maybe not. Catherine used to work with Nick, or did you guys ever actually overlap?
No, I replaced her.
Yeah, you replaced her. Nick replaced Catherine. She was the planning director for Deschutes County for a long time, so she's a great advocate for this region. She knows she was worked a lot in La Pine when she was at Deschutes County. She had tears in her eyes. I mean this literally. When she was on the commission, La Pine finally got acknowledged. She was very proud. So. And so what they do at that level is do rulemaking and adopt goals and rules. So, and our role is to do all those things. So this is me. So I'm staff for LCDC, and my role is to help you guys with whatever you need in terms of getting your goals and rules or complying with our goals and rules. And what I review your, as I said, your post-acknowledgement plan amendments. I'm always happy to help. And then we also have some technical assistance grants. The word on the street about how much we're going to have for this biennium is not very encouraging, but we do have them. When we gave LaPine a fair amount of mm-hmm. technical assistance to get their acknowledgement done. So we have a heap of money. And coastal management is not going to be for you guys, but we have experts, we have specialists in our Salem office that can work on all these things. So a little bit about Land Use Board of Appeals, because you'll hear that term a lot. It's a judicial body. They're in the DSL building now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And frankly, we try to resolve things in such a way that they don't go to LUBA. For a couple reasons. One is every time LUBA makes a decision, we have to do gyrations to figure out what that means for everything else we do after that. It sets precedent. We would much rather stay within stay under the LUBA radar if we can. It's unavoidable. If something gets really contested, it goes to LUBA, and it's not. Hasn't Nick's been there a few times? It's
not. We go there four or five times a year.
It's not a horrible process.
And for us, for the most part, it's a common one is destination resorts. Do they comply with the code? Yes. Do people hate them? Yes. Are they a big economic generator? Yes. Anything that resorts do often is appeal
to
Luba.
And people will find a way to appeal it. I mean, you're thinking to yourself, well, if we followed all the rules and it complies with their code, how can they appeal to find something? They'll find a procedural issue. They'll find something. So.
And then we have a lot of cases, and you could very well find yourself in this, in an isolated case where you have an applicant that believes that their application meets the code, and you have a determined opponent, somebody that's a professional activist, that is not happening here. And so you'll make your decision, and it'll be appealed to city council. And city council can do one of two things. City council can say, we're not going to hear it. The planning commission's decision's final. And so they can just appeal that to the Land Use Board of Appeals, or you could hear it. And if it's an interpretation of your codes or your comprehensive plan, it has more weight at Luba. Well, this isn't clearly established in state law. It's your policy. You've interpreted it this way. Okay, that makes sense to us. But in many cases, what then happens at Luba is the city or the county are never there. It's the applicant and their attorneys, and the opponent and their attorneys, and that's very common where we don't even go because it costs us a fortune
to
send our attorneys to go.
Just getting the record prepared.
Oh, that's a huge.
Now, did Biomass go to Luba? It went to Luba, didn't it?
It was resolved.
It was resolved before it went to Luba, yeah. But there was a threat, yeah.
And that was an outside group that was challenging that they have nothing to do with this.
Yeah, exactly. And that can happen. It's really frustrating, but it can happen. And you know, people complain a lot about our process, but it's pretty balanced. I mean, I think that there's always a lot of things that you can do before you get to the point where something gets appealed to Luba.
Yes.
So there's a bunch of websites. We have a website. Our website's pretty good. One of the things that our website has that I really like is the links to the OARs and the ORSs. So if you want to see what they actually say, it's really easy to get there. So if you go to our website, you guys are probably part of the League of Oregon Cities. They have tremendous resources, and they're free. They have all kinds of good stuff. So that's a place for you. They have training. They have free training. And they have a small cities chapter. Or is Lapine part of that League of Oregon Cities? Small
yes.
City?
Yeah.
So I'm really impressed with their work. Yeah.
That's great.
So that's where we are in Salem, and that's how to get in touch with me. And John wanted to be here tonight. John Jennings is my counterpart. We're both in the Bend office. He works mainly on rural issues, but he was really involved. He worked a lot on the Lapine stuff too. Either of us, you can get us anytime, and we're always happy to help. And you have
a few more slides. I'll rush through. Any duplication?
Sorry, I know that's a ton of information.
But that's why we're quite by the handouts.
Yeah. Let's see.
And in the booklet that you got last time, the primer on. What was it, 25 pages or so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's this little summary.
Thank you.
I'm not going to give you the whole presentation.
I need
one.
So just a couple of additional tips. I try not to repeat what Karen said, but there's some great ways that a planning commission can improve or maintain good relationship with its council, because, as I said, in some cases, people say, well, why did we go to a public hearing before the planning commission when we now have to go to a public hearing before the council? Or one of the greater frustrations that you'll have, seeing with every planning commission I've ever worked with, people don't come to the planning commission public hearing because they know it's the city council that makes the ultimate decision, so they just go right to the city council. And that can be very frustrating.
And let me insert one more thing, too, that I have not seen even the shadow of here. But I have seen in a lot of my jurisdictions is some actually almost frank animosity between the planning commission and the city council, where the planning commission feels like they did all the work and the city council got all the glory and just overturned their work or whatever. So And that's counterproductive. You guys are all volunteers and you're all working for the same thing. So whatever you guys can do to keep the kumbaya going is...
Well, keep one thing in mind, that we're all very compatible.
Yeah.
Okay. And we all function at the behest of the council.
Yeah.
We work for them.
Right.
But that does not stop us from sending them all kinds of stuff that we think needs to be done.
There you go.
And we will never stop doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And as long as the appreciation runs both ways, I think that's your job.
Yeah. So, of course, we've already spoken about this, understanding the responsibilities, just knowing who does what, making the sound decisions. One of the ideas is to attend city council meetings when an appeal of one of your, sorry, typo there, one of your decisions is being considered. Especially in smaller jurisdictions, that can be really important. Deborah, or your staff member at the time, may not have the opportunity to be there when city council is, I would assume that you would be, if there's a planning decision up there, but what was the planning commission's perspective on this? Sometimes it's good for a planning commissioner to be right there, and they can say, well, this is, you know, we discussed it, and these were all the issues. So for you to communicate that directly to city council can be very helpful.
You know, that's a really good point, and I don't see that happen very often, frankly.
No. It happens with ours in the county more, when there's a real big policy decision, and then we'll have our planning commissioners go, and they'll speak to the board.
Yeah. But that we could do that at a regular city council meeting?
Yes.
Here's the difference.
At the very beginning, for a new city, I want you to see how your decisions are processed by the city council. So I try to have at least a couple of you there.
Yeah.
The key thing to say, and we used to have a former county commissioner, Dennis Luke, would always ask the planning commissioners this. Are you speaking on behalf of the planning commission, or are you speaking as an individual planning commissioner? Because unless you have the vote of the entire planning commission to speak on their behalf, you're not. You're speaking as an individual. You can represent yourself as, I'm planning commissioner, I serve on the Lapine City Planning Commission. These are my perspectives from one of the cases.
But
there's
so
a real difference.
If the planning commission is meeting and they anticipate that they're going to send somebody to the council, they should actually consider and vote, say, you know, do I have your permission to go and represent us? And that's okay.
Gloria and I go to I have to go to every council meeting because my wife's on the city council. I have no choice.
We could speak as an individual, but if we are going to speak on behalf, we need to, to get permission.
You can even go to a hearing and speak as an individual, not as a planning commissioner.
Right.
You
yes.
just need to make that very clear on the record that I'm not representing the planning commissioner. I live on this street and I care about this project.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That can be a tricky line to walk.
Yeah, that's good to know that. Okay.
A big one is just ask for clarification. If the council has set a policy or an action that's unclear, whatever the case may be, it could be a procedure, it could be a policy, it could be whatever the case may be, if there's anything that's unclear, ask. And you can ask them directly or you can ask your staff to seek that clarification on your behalf. Include in planning commission minutes any questions or points of view that are not obvious in your decisions and findings. So, for example, your decision and finding is going to explicitly describe how does the project comply or not comply with a specific standard. But there may be other issues involved that you think that are also important to communicate to the council about that application that just don't fit perfectly within there. And just make sure that those are reflected in your meeting minutes someplace, so there's a record of it for them to review. Request an annual joint work session to discuss priorities, communications, etc. Unless you already do that, but it's good to meet annually.
I got to tell you, I work in Wasco County. The Dalles, the city of the Dalles, and the Wasco County just had their first joint meeting in 7 years.
Ooh,
that's just not right.
Yeah.
That is not right.
I like that idea.
One of the things to recognize with the planning commission, of course, Commissioner Ward, you do with your spouse on city council, is that a lot of what Karen talked about, you're the citizen involvement arm on behalf of the city, and then you're also the quasi-judicial entity that makes decisions. And your idea is to have the public interest in mind, et cetera, and do all these great things with planning. But council has a different set of constituents. They're responsible to the voters,
And sometimes it's hard for planning commissions to say, oh, that's right, it's not just planning. They're also looking at the economic impacts of these decisions or impacts on other neighborhoods or transportation systems. They have a bigger, broader perspective. So just remember, and it's good to know what their political platforms are, when, especially in this legislative. As I previously mentioned, do not solely rely on staff to convey your message to anybody. Perform an annual evaluation and follow through with any needed changes in how the commission does business. Does the way you conduct your business work or not? This is hard to see on the side roles, responsibilities, and relations. It's important to remember what staff does. From administering the land use regulations, we prepare staff reports and notices for the meetings. We're there to do the research on planning, land use, development issues, advise and assist the commission, educate and assist the public. That's an important role of staff. Certainly the commission can participate. The staff needs to know how to, needs to both know and know how to interpret laws and ordinances, conduct community and capital planning projects, those are the infrastructure projects, negotiates, facilitates, and coordinates between agencies, developers, and the public. A lot happens behind the scenes that the commission never sees. Enforce municipal code, conditions of approval. Of course, that the county does that now. Not necessarily with land use, but we do with building permits in the city. And the final one is providing continuity, policy documents, and people. And then the impacts, explaining the land use plan, the zoning, subdivision requirements at the counter. You don't have a counter yet, but you'll get one in not too long. Staff's explanation and attitude, and I can't emphasize attitude enough. Affect the tone and content of testimony at the public, at the planning commission meeting. If your staff is, and of course, you're not in this situation yet, but if your staff isn't upbeat and positive and let's figure out how way we can do this, and it's not like this everywhere, it can be adversarial. Staff can have their own agenda. It sets the tone for what is going to come before you or the council in the future. The staff accepts and rejects the applications. That's not something that the Planning Commission does. Staff's assured, and with, so staff will have a checklist. This is what's required in the code. This is what's submitted. And staff, by law, has 30 days in which to determine whether an application is complete or not. And making sure that those applications are complete will save you a lot of time and confusion at your meetings. Prepare the staff reports. It's important for staff to identify the key issues. You shouldn't be in the position where you have to do that. Your staff should be able to do that. Data, criteria, assist the Planning Commission with the decisions and testimony. The notices are critical. That's a procedural issue that Karen talked about. And it's important for the staff to stay current on regulations, court cases, rulings, etc. Your code may say one thing. A big issue not too long ago, a few years ago, were signs. And everybody loves to regulate signs. Gosh, they're overwhelming, they're too big, they're too small, they're too bright, they're too this, they're too that. But you know what I really hate is I really hate the fact that, you know, Bob down the street, his sign is advertising his business right, you know, and that's not even the business that's there. It's a different business. You can't regulate content. That was a Supreme Court case that came down within the last 10 years. You can be in the size of the signs, the colors of the signs, whether they're lit or not, the placement, the height, everything about it, you can regulate. But what somebody puts on there, if they want to advertise Walmart in Bend, and it's in front of your Bi-Mart store here, they can do that. You can regulate the number of signs. You can do all those things, just not the content.
What about words? I mean, offensive words, things like that, you can regulate that, right?
Well,
it's speech. It gets to be very, very tricky.
I know.
There's one element of the law that says if something is so harsh, so horrible, that it's universally found to be vulgar, then you can do something. But there's a test, and you don't usually get into that. For the most part, you have to be content neutral. You can't look at what the words say.
What, one of the things we've noticed is people complain about, as you come in to Lapine, on the left-hand sign, there's written head shop, Lapine head shop. It's like, no, we can't have that here, you know, and everybody's saying, yeah, they can have that way. And
Time, manner, and placement are typically typically things that we can review. So if the sign had a piece of it that was dangling in the wind, we could deal with that.
Okay.
If it wasn't made of the materials that are allowed, we could deal with that.
Oh, we can deal with some of that.
Yep.
Okay.
And if they're selling something that's not legal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is anything not legal anymore?
Yeah. Or you can have a head shop, sorry.
And really my point, which is with the last one, is your staff staying current on regulations, is when that Supreme Court case came down, a lot of codes regulated content.
Yeah.
And so it's important for your staff to say, well, it's going to take us time to bring our code into compliance with the new law, but we can't enforce it. So it's, and signs are such a lightning rod issue.
Nick, you bring up something that's really important for a new city. We all know lots of people in town, and it's very easy to let a judgment about a person get in the way of providing the service. And your comments really hits the nail on the head, because let's say we had a client come in, a customer came in, and we know he got in trouble. He got fined by the state, you know, he kicks his dog, you know, he's just bad. But every time that person comes in the door, it's a fresh opportunity to explain our codes, to answer his questions, to make sure that we're giving the best possible service, even though we know all those things. It doesn't matter. So we have to be so careful not to let anything that we know about a person get in the way of providing the excellent service, because we don't want to have somebody say that Lapine plays favorites, or they didn't give me this data, and they're doing that because of this. It's just so much easier to have a totally fresh approach every time that person walks in the door. And that's what we want to have staff do, because it's just going to keep you out of trouble every single time.
When I was at the county, there were some people, we used to draw straws, and we saw them coming up to the county.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
That was
because it's all electronic.
It was a different day. That was
1990.
I just have a couple of lists here, what you should expect of your staff in the future. And one of the things that's important, I can tell you from the county, that we've seen, and we've talked with Deborah for the last 4 or 5 years about this, are just the revenues, the number of applications that have been submitted for projects in the city of Lapine, because we, of course, still receive them at the county. And, you know, 2006-07, it was still pretty good, and then went through the crash. Well, we're really seeing a rebound right now, from subdivisions to signs to a lot of little things. It's really going to begin to pick up. And I think this training is so great. You're going to rely on your staff once you put this into motion here before too long. Because it's picking up, and we're seeing it across the whole region. Some ideas, things just what you should expect of your staff. You know, we're well organized. We anticipate the type of information you will need. What are the key issues you're going to want to address? We need to be able to respond to information in a timely and a professional manner. We need to be prepared, accurate, well-researched, documented. We want great staff reports. That's a duty. You should expect that. We should provide exhibits, illustrations, pictures, help, etc., so you can visualize and the public visualize what the proposal is. What is it? We need to help orient new commissioners, what we're doing now, be accessible to all commissioners, and I think that's extremely important. I have some commissioners now that contact me on a regular basis because they're very interested about a wide variety of projects and things they never hear from. What I try to do as their staff is, if I get a question from one, I respond to all. Unless it's something about, well, where's the public notice for this property and it's outside the city, or, you know, just quickly, well, it's on the corner or whatever. But I try to be sure, you don't want to play favorites with anybody, and you should have that expectation of your staff. Keep all other commissioners equally informed, implement the commission's decision, and that's a big one. Some staff really have a very difficult issue with that. Look, the staff, we absolutely recommended that you deny this, you approved it, and now I'm going to council and I'm going to tell them to deny it.
You're right.
Now, the planning commission wants you to approve, but I think you should deny it, and for these three reasons. And different staff have different perspectives on that.
And it can be, that can be really, really hard on staff.
Yeah.
I've got an issue in Hood River County right now. The poor staff, they're just sweating blood. It's brutal.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I'll say about Deborah. She's always well prepared whenever she can explain things.
And that has a lot to do with it. I mean, if we just look at it, it doesn't make much sense, but if you can explain it, you know, it's a lot more meaningful. We can make a more informed decision, so.
Exactly.
You know, that's
and you should expect your staff to do that.
Yeah.
And you should expect your staff to act in a fair, ethical, and consistent manner. We shouldn't have conflicts of interests just like you shouldn't or anybody else. And we need to make professional verbal presentations at your meetings. Now, the staff's expectations of the commission is that you prepare for meetings. I can't tell you how many meetings I've been to in my career where the commissioners arrive, and hey, it's good to see you, John, it's good to see you, Bob. They're up there with their commissioners. They're opening their packet.
For the first time.
For the first time. And I see it opening, and I think, oh boy, here we go tonight. You know, what's this? Listen, you know. I'm just going to tell you what I think about this, you know, great. You know, it'd be great if you researched that. So one of it is that you prepare for the meetings. Call staff with questions before the meeting. If there's really a hot button topic, you know, that's not ex parte. That's totally allowed.
Yeah.
Hey, look, Deborah, what's going on with this traffic requirement here? I don't understand this. Okay. Or can you be prepared to answer this question tonight? Right. Hey, I don't know. You know what? Let me look into that. Good question. So the staff can be prepared. Staff expectations, you examine all the facts on a given issue, make your best decision possible. State your reasons for a decision. Don't ridicule or make light of staff. Don't assume that the staff's wrong. And I didn't prepare this. I took this right out of another presentation.
I'm not going to let you get away with it.
Yeah, trust and respect staff. Remember that the planner's first responsibility is to the city or to the county or whatever jurisdiction that they're working
Borough.
For.
So. Boy, yeah, where'd you get that one? Borough.
Yeah, this one actually got from this great Alaskan handbook. It was a borough. Yeah, it was great. It's good to explain your reasoning if the commission disagrees with a staff recommendation. And again, same as the other, act in a fair, ethical, and consistent manner. How to be a better commissioner. You know, this is the not-so-effective commission chair. Some funny deals here. You know, and this is so important because I've worked with commissioners as well. And if, especially on a legislative matter, if it's somebody you really like and you know or you really support the issue, it's so crystal clear because the commissioner is up at the table, they're looking, hey, so can you tell me more about that? And if it's a commission or if it's an opponent, it's the regular opponent, they sit back and, you know, and they do just that. It's like,
yeah.
It's so, your nonverbals up there are so important. To just be aware of them as you go.
Especially if you're on TV.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Master the rules of procedure. Karen mentioned this. Very important to know how to make a motion, when to make a motion, what it means, seconding, amending motions, etc. Know the criteria and standards to be applied to the applications. Set aside time for long-range thinking and brainstorming, since that's primarily been the objective of the commission. Publish an annual report and a work plan. This could be very simple. This could be a couple pages. It could be what we do, the county, is a 28-page document. It's very detailed. It goes into what did we accomplish last year, who does what are we going to work on this next year. We have public hearings on it. But it could be something very simple. It could be a one sheet of paper, piece of paper. What is it we're going to work on this year? And then give that to the council. Or have a meeting with the council and say, look, I think this year we need to update this part of the code or adopt that part of the code or whatever the case may be. But it's good to just have. What are you going to do in the next year? You know, businesses have good business plans.
I'm going to say, I really support that idea. I think that's a really important idea for two reasons. One, it gives you some focus for the year. It also helps you keep from getting pulled off track.
Yes.
So if somebody brings up something and you can say, you know, you look at staff and the staff says, well, that's really not on the work prep plan, so we need to revisit the work plan. If you want to take that on, something else is probably
exactly.
going to happen. So it keeps your priorities clear. I really like that. You guys do that really well.
Well, it's really good for everybody because you're right. It's good for staff, it's good for the planning commission, it's good for the council. When somebody comes and asks you, what can we do this? And you can say, well, that's a great idea. Let's consider putting it on next year's work plan because we don't have the resources. We don't have money to hire a consultant or we don't have staff time to take up that really important project.
And that's what they do. They link it to staff time and resources so they know.
It's a good thing.
Do we have a work plan now?
We don't at this point. And the work plan that we had in the past was to start processing applications. That's the most important thing for this community. Otherwise, I'm just going to lose, you know, planning commissioners are going to lose interest because there isn't a job.
Right.
Well, with the city manager change and the fact that there's an identified need to really focus on the financial situation and get that straightened out. That's had to have been pushed back.
Right.
In the meantime, we're going to keep on with the training and get you prepared for that. And if you remember,
right,
we're doing the fee resolution,
right,
getting the forms in place,
right,
everything focused on processing the community's applications.
Okay.
That's our plan.
As a matter of, you know, functionality, are we going to, what is our function? Where's it going to be in the chain? Do we start the site plan? Do we have that all decided yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that written down someplace where we can review?
Yeah. Take a look at the procedures ordinance in your binder.
Okay.
And there will be things that I want you to get your teeth into. I want you to do site plans.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody comes in for a sign permit and somebody's got a business that they want to open, I'll
right,
probably issue that administratively. If there's a comprehensive or a complex sign plan for a brand new shopping center,
mm-hmm,
then I want you to dig your teeth into that.
And
so,
we're also going to have the plan amendment coming up for the TSP. So that'll be your first.
Sure.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing that might help as well in the not too distant future, either Deborah could do it or we could do it in a couple months, just because we are really short-staffed right now ourselves, would be somebody could bring, you know, what are the last five land use decisions we've issued in the county applying our code inside the city of La Pine.
You can see how
and
it
you
works.
Can see
yes,
how it unfolded. What
that would be excellent.
What right now we're doing a new neighborhood a replat, the new plat for Crescent Creek, 298 lots. It's
right,
huge.
And
that would be,
we sent comments in.
It expired.
We discussed at a previous meeting.
Yeah, it expired
so
this summer, so they're just reviewing.
The result of
but there's real interest in
looking at how all the
here,
criteria were
yeah,
met,
yeah,
I'll get that to you so you can look at them.
How
yeah,
are we going to support this?
Yeah, it's good. You have the infrastructure in place. We're working with them on across
okay,
all boards. Oh, yeah.
That's good. It's exciting. It's scary.
Continue to learn. Everybody's mentioned keeping an open mind. Another that I can't emphasize enough is do not be afraid to disagree. Sometimes commissions feel like we need to talk an issue to death because we all have to, you know, Commissioner Ward, why can't you just get online? You know, everybody else supports this. It's okay to disagree.
It's not great.
our Board of Commissioners, when they see a 4-3 Planning Commission vote, they know that reflects the will of Deschutes County residents.
Yeah.
These are split decisions and it's okay to disagree. And feel comfortable disagreeing, and it's respectful, and of course, but just don't be afraid to disagree. Except some other attributes of an effective planning commission here, and you have these in your slide in your piece as well. This I've got 4 or 5 points here, and this is reflections of John Van Landingham.
Oh, really? Oh,
no.
And he provided.
He was on my commission. Yeah.
He was the chair of LCDC for 12 years.
And it's superior.
But what's interesting and what Karen is the staff to them, just like I'm the staff to the Board of Commissioners, Planning Commission, and to you tonight. We're in the same, so he was just a different commission.
Yeah.
And so I took the points, he was at a conference, and I wrote them down as fast as I could. And it was funny because I saw him a couple weeks later and said, John, those were just phenomenal.
Yeah.
I wrote them down, and he said, well, that's great, because I threw the piece of paper away. They were just I just jotted it down. He said, can you email it to me? So I said, yeah. So I thought what he said was so brilliant. And,
yeah,
and so these are my parting comments. Never fight over process, only over substance. His comment was, do whatever it takes to make the process right. If there's a procedural error, start over. Renotice the meeting.
Yeah.
Make sure everybody has a fair shot. Extend time limits for public comments. Conduct additional meetings. Do whatever is necessary so that the process is right. Save all your fights for the substance, because that's what planning's all about. Not everybody's going to agree, and that's okay. But make sure everybody has a fair shot at participating. Here's the Van Landingham process. This is really unique. Now, most jurisdictions, without reading this, most jurisdictions will just sit there and they'll call up one, okay, you know, John Smith, okay, come up, John gives his testimony, and then Sharon Jones comes up, and you just kind of go back and forth. Some places, well, let's hear from everybody that supports it, they all come up.
Yeah.
And then let's hear everybody that opposes it, and they all come up.
Yeah.
What he did is he wanted people to talk, wanted people at the table to talk about the issues, and he put people at the table to talk about them. And it allowed the parties to go back and forth. So, and he gave this example in Woodburn,
where the city of Woodburn's at the table, and they have this argument that they're making to the commission over a UGB amendment, and 1,000 Friends of Oregon, who absolutely opposed it, came up to this, they rather than just listening to the city say, here's our the reasons to support it, and they went on and on and on, and then 1,000 Friends gets up there, and they go on and on and on, and then the commission's left holding the bag. He had them sit there together. So this is what you're proposing because you need this much land. That's right, and we need this land because, okay, great, stop. 1,000 Friends, why is it that you don't think that they have enough? Well, we don't think that they have enough, great. So Woodburn, how do you respond to that? It was just going back and forth right in the chair. Because, he said it really made, and this is a totally out of the box. I haven't seen anybody else do this, but it was one of these eye-openers of what a great idea, because the commission gets to see, look, what are the disagreements about? Let's have it out right here so the commission's not left holding the bag. Well, they said this, and they said this. Have them do it right there.
It takes a lot, it takes a strong chair.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And you know, to be fair, John kind of drove everybody crazy with this.
Yeah.
But it was a good process for these really difficult decisions.
As I just said, he didn't like unanimous votes. Parties feel like they've been heard, and the process works for them if it's whatever the size of the commission is, if it's a 3-to-1 vote. Whatever the case may be, great. You know, they heard me. I don't like it. And one person agreed with me. Okay, well, I lost the debate, but at least I got heard. So I thought that was a good point. Get out into the community. Officials and staff must get out in the community, and officials being the city council as well. Mm-hmm. That's the only way for us to really understand the issues, particularly if there's some type of a tour involved. And as important, it helps people understand who the officials and staff are. It's not that city council, it's not that planning commission, or that staff that's been there forever that really runs the whole show. When you put a face with a name and you get to know people, it builds bridges. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. Spend the time to do that. I love this one too. Don't ever assume people are acting in bad faith. People have strong opinions about different issues and express those opinions differently, but rarely do people act in bad faith. So don't ever assume it. People are going to be right in your face. They're right in staff's face. They're right in the applicant's face or the opponent's face. But try not to assume that they're ever acting in bad faith. There's a natural tension between what happens at the state and local levels.
No.
When there is a statewide planning program and the state's bought into the goals, we do it at the county. Karen knows it. We push the envelope all the time, and and sometimes I know it. Karen, we're going to push the envelope on this, and if you think it's okay, great. And if not, she pushes back. And nope, you're going too far with this. Okay, great. So when I go to the planning commission or the board of commissioners, I can say, look, these are kind of the sideboards we're operating in. Now, we've butted up against this, but there's going to be the tension, and it's to be expected. Don't be afraid of public involvement. And he had a great example here. People will be rude, mean, and angry with you, and that's okay. Isn't it great that so many people care so deeply about the issues? And he used the example of closing elementary schools in neighborhoods. And just people just scream, because he was also on the Eugene, I don't know, some commission in Eugene, the city of Eugene, and just listening to people so angry, and, you know, just furious. And that's okay. That's to be okay with that is such a big deal. And it's important to have some fun and have some laughter. And I loved a couple of these, so that's what I ended it on, you know. Are you still playing that game where you create the whole city from the ground up? Yes, and today I gave people 2 edicts. Think for yourselves and don't be idiots. And then I love the bottom one too. You know, why do you want to be our new long range planner, Mr. Duckburg? Because long range is very far away. It would be impossible to evaluate my performance.
That's good.
So, I haven't seen either of those.
These are 2 of my favorites.
How come you don't have the Farsight Bingo Farm next to the daycare center?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That was good, yeah.
Those are classic.
That's what we have for you this evening. We're happy to answer any questions. We've just put so much on your
plate. Your head's going to explode.
I have 2 questions for you.
Yes.
I'll ask them both at the same time, and you can answer them at the same time. Going back to what you said about county involvement with the various cities as far as planning and codes and permits and so forth, when Lapine finally reaches the point where we have our staff that can do what you're doing now under the current IGA, how much involvement will the county still have in what we're doing?
In planning, we won't have any. We will just be a resource for you.
What about permits?
For building permits, the county still has jurisdiction over building permits, but building permits are just based on what the International Building Code says.
And we'll link up.
Yes.
To coordinate so that a building permit isn't released prior to the land use, things like that.
Exactly.
And then are you currently keeping the council informed of the permits that you're processing, or?
We send the city, yeah, we send the city staff, and we've done this since the city incorporated, a notice of every application we receive, an opportunity to comment on every application that comes before the county, and then we send, send decisions.
Can I email those up to you guys?
Yes, we can. Who makes the comments now, if there's a comment to be made?
Well, typically I bring it before you as a planning commission item. So when there's a big project, we'll talk about it. And I think that's the best way to proceed. If maybe a need for a special meeting, if something pops up with a tight timeline that you want to have some comments forwarded on, we would have a short meeting just to do that.
And sometimes it's the city, sometimes it's the Public Works Department that they provide comments, of course, about infrastructure or the fire district, ODOT. Yeah, great question. Okay. So,
you said, I thought you had two questions.
Yeah, those were both.
That was it.
Those kinds of things, can they be handled by email, or does it have to be an open meeting? I mean, if we had, you know, you made a presentation and we have questions and you can ask you questions, but.
I'd prefer to do it in a meeting. I don't want anybody to think that what we discuss isn't available to the public.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
And then you get comments about serial need, it's just not good. We had an issue with that coffee hut earlier where a comment came up about that. And better to be in front of your commission talking about it so everybody's got a chance.
Yeah.
I think if you have questions that come up and you send to Deborah, if she brings them up.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, I know. I often want to ask a question while it's in my brain,
right.
But then it's staff's responsibility to make sure.
Norm,
yeah.
Any question? I'm good for now. Just reading to you here. Very good presentation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes,
enjoyed
very
it.
Good.
We want to thank you very much. That was really very informative.
Very nice.
It really was.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Because, you know, we're all just volunteers. We, you know, none of us thought we were going to be sitting here a year ago.
That's one of the reasons why I think that the department put that whole presentation together, is recognizing that all planning commissioners are volunteers. And, you know, it's a big task.
Yeah.
It's important. It's important. And the system wouldn't work without planning commissions.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We do appreciate you coming down and doing that for us. Okay. Other matters? I have one. We'll call it summer vacation. I'd like the consensus of the two of you that we cancel our meeting for July and August. Unless Deborah has something comes up that we really need to do. I don't see anything big going on right now.
No, and that's perfectly fine, and I'll keep you abreast of anything that comes up.
Nothing on the rise.
I'll be gone in August anyway, so.
Yeah, me too. We agree on that?
That's fine.
Okay, Patty, would you convey that onto the council that we're going to cancel our July and August meetings?
With the provisio.
Unless Deborah comes up with something else. Okay, anything else? Kathy, I see you out there.
Yeah, I just need a question here for my little pea brain. I guess mine's exploding. On the sign regulations, you know, we were talking about that. Well, the planning commission keep carrying this forward, and then the other question is, we have a lot is where the actual city limits are, that our signs are not correct. Those are just, to me, I'm thinking simple things that we can work on, but how is the process? Will that come from you guys?
No, signs about population or where the city limits are, Public Works should handle that. So I would let Scott know that there's a flaw, and he can coordinate with ODOT to get those signs updated, or at least find out if they're on the schedule.
Okay.
And then, just like the rest of our land use codes, everything's done, just waiting for, you know, the scheduling of when the city will take over. So sign permits right now are handled by the county under their code.
Okay.
And then when we take over, we'll do sign regulation. In the interest of time, because those are often over-the-counter things, if they meet certain criteria, then staff can just get those done, because we want business to keep moving along. If there's a big giant issue, for example,
Market and the head shop signs.
Yeah.
They're just handwritten and stapled up there.
If they violate some criteria, then, you know, that's a code enforcement issue that we'd have to deal with.
Okay.
Now, we do have a sign code.
We do have that.
There is a sign code in place.
But we can't use it till we take over.
I thought it was interesting. We never heard any complaints about our sign code until after it went in.
That I'm also on the planning commission.
Okay.
I mean, I'm also on the public works commission.
Okay.
We have addressed all of these things with Rick Allen.
Oh, okay.
And he knows we've got signs that are not right. The DMV, we brought it up today, the DMV sign up here.
Okay.
It says turn right, there goes the DMV that's been closed for 2 months and it'll never reopen. At Wickiup Junction, it says Lapine, 2 miles south.
Yeah.
You're right in the middle of the line.
Yeah.
But
is that a
there's a time process involved here that Scott knows about them.
Okay.
He's going to take care of them. It's just when he can do it.
Okay.
It's on the
list.
Okay.
Signs are awfully fun to talk about. I just got some really interesting phone calls from the billboard companies. And worked out very well, you know, very open dialogue. Explained to him that, you know, our goal is to not have any more than are in effect at the time we take over. And he understood that. He said, well, I'm not really thinking of doing any more. You know, we think Lapine has got the right amount. And but it's up to us as a city to make sure that we have that dialogue. And there's only maybe five or six billboard companies that would deal in Oregon anyway.
Yeah.
So it's an easy group to talk to.
Okay, good.
Just
they
have
do
to let
pay
them
attention,
go.
Though. They do pay attention.
Yeah, they're money makers. And for Lapine member, we talked about this. We have a traveling public we have to serve.
Right.
The billboards serve a purpose. We don't want them out of hand. I'd asked the gentleman if he'd run his electrical underground. He said, fine. You know, you want that dialogue to encourage people to work with us, because all we need is more overhead lines.
No.
You know, we have identified all these signs around town that are against the code and are unsightly and need to be fixed, changed, or removed. And nothing can happen until the council hires a code enforcement officer.
Right.
Because we can't do it. You can't do it. We have to have somebody that can do it. And
I don't understand why they haven't done that yet.
Well,
it hasn't happened yet.
You had some weirdness come up with the transition of city managers, so you got to deal with that, because finance and the budget can't live without that.
Yes.
So if planning gets delayed a little bit, and when that jurisdiction does transfer over, then these are the kinds of things that will show up in a work plan, Kathy, where we're going to need some code enforcement help. Here's what we plan to do in kind of a priority order. And that will occur in discussion with both groups, so that you have a good dialogue with the people who are seeing the problem and you with the money.
Money.
Any further questions from anybody? Any other comments?
Thank you.
I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
A second.
All in favor, aye.
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 little thing.
You think they did with the signs?
That's what I gave right there.
You see, there's a sign code.
See you guys soon.